طيب الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام الأتمان الأكملان على محمد رسول الله سيد الأولين والآخرين وإمام الأنبياء والمرسلين والشافع المشفع يوم الدين ومن استنى بسنته واهتدى بهديه إلى يوم الدين أما بعد. حياكم الله dear brothers and sisters to this session or seminar or whatever you call it. And as you see this today, it is about, as you see, it is about Muslims in the UK. Yesterday we talked about certain issues. Of life in the UK specifically and in the non-Muslim lands generally. And we went through three things. Life Life, race and death. Then we have one. Now, so as I said, we talked about life, and we said that life in the UK is like life anywhere, but when we talk about life in the UK from the point of view of Islam, we're gonna come to talk about some other different things, like the foundations of life in Islam, which we are going to discuss, inshallah, very soon. Life in the UK, as we said yesterday, is for four different types of people. One who is originally from UK and he converted to Islam. So this type of person has no choice other than to live in the UK. And then this person has different obligations and rights, as you see. We're going to talk about the rights and obligations. When we talk about life, we have to talk about these two main articles. Rights that you claim and obligations that you have to fulfill. Even when you live in the UK or anywhere of the Muslim land, you still have some obligations upon you to do. Our concern today is to talk about the I don't know if it is the batteries or this. Don't think that. You're not sure of this? Okay, try this one, let us see. Now. Oh. Yeah, Atil. Atil, tell him, halas. It's wrong. So, as I said, life, in general, it is life, here or there or anywhere. But when we talk about the Islamic life, it is different. The rights and obligations here are different than the rights and obligations of a Muslim living in a Muslim land. And as I said yesterday, you have some more obligations when you live here than when you live in a Muslim land. And you have less rights, unfortunately. You have less rights. That's based on the facts. And that's what we see. And for example, let us be a little bit honest. Now it became a phenomenon that many Western countries banned the woman face cover. So this is a right of yours, but can you take it? Can you have it? The answer is no. The answer is no. And some other things. But the fact is that the life, the style of life in the West is different from the style of life in the East or in the Muslim countries. It's completely different. So you have to make yourself used to it. But within the Islamic guidance. You don't make yourself used to it up and out, it is. But up on the Islamic guidance. What we see today, that most of the Muslims living in the UK or in the Muslim, in non-Muslim lands are living, taking life as it is, as a fact. But they are not taking it as the Islamic guidance. Some are doing that, yes, but the majority, unfortunately, no. They're not going by that. They're not going by that. And this is because of the influence that comes from the society. This is the influence coming from the society. It makes you, can do that. We have non-Muslims living in the Muslim lands, and they face the same thing. They face the same thing. But our concern is the Muslim. Muslim living in the non-Muslim land. You have to manage your life to make it go as with the guidance of Islam. Don't start to bring excuses for the violations that you have, the violations that your wife have, the violations that your children have. Or you just try to find the easy way. Like, for example, you're married to a sister who came to Islam, but all of your family are kuffar. What are you going to do in this case? How is silatul rahim going to be? This is the fiqh that you need. We in the East, we don't need it, because we usually marry from Muslim families. So now, for you, you need to know. Your wife wants to go and do salatul rahim to her relatives, like parents, like brothers, sisters, aunts, whatsoever. How is it going to go? How is it going to go, Yaqub? That's a problem. Your mother-in-law is kafir, and she's having a boyfriend living in the house. Some are still thinking that, oh, I cannot prevent her from salat al-rahim. It is haram, because he doesn't have fiqh. How come you allow your wife to go to that house while a stranger man is not her stepfather? He is only a boyfriend of her mother. And that's dangerous and serious. What shall you do? Ban her from going there? Then you cause her to cut the kinship relation. So the easy way is to be in contact with her mother through the phone. Through the phone. To avoid this type of violation. One another is married to a sister, and he banned her, he cut her from all type of contact with her family. That is wrong. That is not up to you to take her as a prisoner and keep her home and only contact to you. That's also not allowed. She has rights like you have rights. But as you said, that these rights and obligations must go as per the Islamic disparity. How do you know this? Only when you seek knowledge. And that's what we are coming to talk about later. There are a lot of problems when we talk about life, rights and obligations of life in the non-Muslim lands. The schooling system, the marriage system, the business system, the transportation system, all of it in total cause a lot of difficulties to the Muslim. Not like it in the Muslim world. It's there much easier. Life there is difficult from other sides. I mean, maybe economy, financial side, but not in the religious side. Here maybe economically it is easier. I don't say it is okay, but it is easier. However, Islamically it is difficult. It is much more difficult than it in the Muslim world. The rights of the Muslim here. You have the right which does not, you have the right that you can claim from the non-Muslim government, which does not contradict with the law of Islam. For example, the welfare. It's your right, you can have it. But do not lie. Many people think that this is my right, I'll take it by any means. No. No, that's wrong. So many people lie, deceive, and think that it's only, these are only kuffar. Now that's not acceptable according to the law of Islam. It's not acceptable. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had the savings of Quraysh, who were not only kuffar, but were harsh kuffar with him. They caused him a lot of problems, to the limit that he could not even continue living in Mecca, and he migrated to Medina. But before he left Mecca, he left all savings with Ali radiallahu anhu, and he asked Ali to return the savings to the owners. He did not consider it, or it's my right, because now they are causing a lot of harm and will go and you have the right to get whatever yani, now, you have the right to get whatever, I don't know what you call it, I'm trying to figure it out, or kind of the indemnity or atonement. For example, yani, you have a law here. If other than the insurance, but this is from the government, as I understand. Like, for example, like what happened in the incidents of the crisis of Ramadan, right? And they paid, as I hear that they paid all the shops and. Right. That, I mean, the government paid due to the harm that came from this right. The government paid. What do you call that? The compensation. Okay. They paid this compensation. Now your life is not like their life. You're Muslim. You're Muslim. You look, do I deserve it? they claim that you deserve it, but do I deserve it? If I don't deserve it, why should I take it? It's not a gift given. It's not a gift given to you. And look to the title of it, compensation. Compensation means that you have lost something, so they pay you something else. If you did not lose nothing, so why you take it? Why you take it? Oh, they are giving everybody. I'm not everybody. I'm not like everybody. I'm not like everybody. So I mean, there are rights that you can claim, but be careful. Do not just continue on taking what everybody is taking. You have to learn what is the right that to be taken, and what is the right that is not yours. That is not yours. Now, the obligations. There is a principle in Islam, the fiqh of Islam says, al-ghurmu bil-ghun. Al-ghurmu bil-ghun. Al-ghurmu is what you pay or what you lose. And al-ghun is what you earn, what you gain. Right? If you are somebody going to be made and to pay, then you have the right to take. You have the right to take. But if you are not somebody who's made to pay for this, this like the insurance, for example. If it is obligatory upon you to pay insurance, as I understand, it is. It is obligatory to pay insurance. Then you say here, al-ghurmu bil-ghurm. As you lost this money, you can take money, but you can take as what you paid, not more than that. Even if they have no problem to give you more than that, but you don't take more than that. And in all this, you have to make them understand that this is because of your religion. Because it is not allowed in your religion. It's not permissible. So you have rights and you have obligations. We talked yesterday about Muslim life, which in the UK, Muslim in the UK, which begins from birth. Look at it. When you have a new child born, many things. First thing of the child born is the circumcision. I know that you are allowed to circumcise the boy, but it is not allowed for circumcising girls. They consider it a crime.
It is a sunnah, but it is a sunnah.
But I mean, in the Muslim countries, we can do that. We can do that. But in the Muslim countries, you can't. And this is one of the problems that the Muslim face, and the disadvantage of being staying amongst the kuffar. They don't understand the concept of it, so they don't accept it. And the Muslims here do not care. They did not claim for their rights. This is one of their rights. they did not, and they don't yani claim for it, and they should, they should claim for it. And I don't know what crime on it, but let's consider the crime. The raising of children here, one of the main difficulty. Maybe you have some Muslim schools, but they are not enough, and they are expensive. And they are expensive. What are you going to do? And there is a law that you do home schooling, then no other choices. You have to do home schooling. And then they go on for the exam. But you do not throw your children into the kuffar schools, and then they grow up and you say, for example, when they come back, when we correct them, no, the child picks from his teacher more than he picks from his parents, and the child also is influenced by his schoolmates more than he is influenced by his brothers and sisters. So you have to, I'm sure that everyone knows this reality, but many of us just want to ignore it and maybe argue in it. I mean, that's not the situation, my kids are not like that, my kids. But this is the reality of the majority. I don't want to say all, because someone would say, no, I'm a different thing, and I don't know what makes him different. But at least I could say the majority are going to be affected. So the best way is to do home schooling instead of sending the kids to the kuffar school. And just if it is just by them being there, they will be influenced in the way, yani, the kuffar dresses, the kuffar speaks, the kuffar, you know, this will be enough to corrupt. One day I was in Canada, and I was about to enter a mosque. There was a Canadian brother accompanying me. We were just by the gate of the mosque when a child of maybe 12, 13, 14 years old, like that, he passed by us, seeing that he was coming from the school because he had his bag on his back. And he gave a big yell, saying, "Oh, Bin Laden?" So I told my friend, "You stay with him, I'm going to establish him. Lecture, but you stay with him." And he started from what it is, why he said that. It took around maybe 15 to 20 minutes, and then he came in. So after the muhada, when we went back home, I asked him, what's the matter of that boy? He said, that boy is an Algerian boy who his parents came to Canada, and he was entered to school. I'm a school there. The boy now is corrupted mentally. And he only knows this type of clothes, that it is for the life. And even he doesn't have that much idea about Islam. He doesn't have much idea about Islam. It's not because his parents do not speak about Islam home. No, but because the influence comes from the school is much greater than it in the house. We all were kids, and we know that we pick from the teacher, from the classmates, more than what we pick from parents and the brothers and sisters. So we have to be careful, because at the end, as the Prophet ﷺ said, or as Allah Ta'ala said, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا قُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ وَأَهْلِيكُمْ نَارًا. All you who believe, protect yourselves and your families from the fire. And the Prophet ﷺ said, كُلُّكُمْ رَاعٍ وَمِسْئُولُ الْعَرَيَةِ. Every one of you is responsible of the assignment given to him. Yani, you are a father, you are responsible of this family. Mother, same thing. Worker, you're going to be responsible, and you're going to be questioned. It's not any joke. What answer are you going to get? Think of it. Yes, some of you are not able to go elsewhere. Then we say, as I said yesterday, you have to double the work that you do. It's not correct that you just go work, come back home, and maybe on Fridays or just 12 times you come to the masjid. That is not correct. You have to make yourself tired and seeking the knowledge, purifying your iman, and also influencing your family, teaching them, conveying these things that you are to them. And as you see today in the West, most of the Islamic institutes, and I mean whatsoever is Islamic, and mosque whatsoever, they are more involved in politics than teaching what the Muslims here need to know. So this is another difficulty, where to go. You have to work hard to know where to go. So in order that you learn something, you benefit your family. So another difficulty face the Muslims here. And as I said, the influence. Muslim and Britain, the foundations of life and Islam. Let's look and then I'll open the session for you to ask and we talk to each other. The Aqeedah. Can anybody tell me, here in the UK, Muslims, how many Aqeedah they have? And they order upon one Aqeedah? It's a diversity. It's more than the Christians and their corruption. Here in the UK you have the Qadiani, you have the Ahbash, you have the Shia, you have the Diwandis, the Bahrawis, you have the Sufis, you have the Ahmadis, you have the Ahmadis and Qadiani, same thing. You have the those who are involved in politics, as they are called, the Sururis or Ikhwanis or Hizb al-Tahrir or whatsoever, many names. And every other day you see someone come up with a new thing. So which way you go? Which way you take? In the Muslim lands, you don't see it like that. It's more clear. Even Muslim lands where there is some corruption. But for example, if you go to Morocco, you may see Sufism, but you don't see, for example, Shia, you don't see Ahmadis. And it is easier for you to figure out where to go. Now, when we go to anywhere, if you go to, for example, Bahrain, you will see Shia and Sunnah. So easy to figure out. But when you come to such countries, not only UK, but we're talking about Muslims in UK because we are in the UK now. But this is exactly the same model to all the Muslim countries. So the Aqeedah is unclear again. So you need to know which type of institute that you go to in order to state your Aqeedah. And you have to learn Aqeedah. You have to. You have to. It's not only when a speaker comes from Saudi, I come and attend the seminar. No, this is not studying, ya akhwan. We're going to explain Aqeedah Tahawiyah in maybe 18 days or like that. This is not the way we studied it. We studied it over years. Sometimes just to go through it like that. If we there in the Muslim land needed to take long time to understand it with the Shaykh, what about you here? You just come like sandwich and go. But and you need to come regularly. You need to ask the Imam in the Masjid to set up a program for us. We need to learn. We need to learn our deen. The people of Yemen, when the Emperor Islam, they came, they sent someone to Rasulullah and asked him to send somebody to teach them Islam. He said, choosing the best of the Sahaba in regard to Mu'adh ibn Jabal. And he advised them, he said, when you go to Yemen, start first with La ilaha illallah, the Aqeedah. Because it is very important. If people do not understand Aqeedah, the sacrifice that they make will be major, but will not be for the sake of Allah, and it will be harmful than it to be beneficial. Ibadah. Look at it today. How much Ibadah you need to do. It's not only the obligatory, even the obligatory prayers are not given much care. Maybe it is due to the circumstances that they are in. Maybe because you work, you are on duty. And because they are kuffar, they don't understand that you stop and go pray and come back. It's now a disadvantage of living. It's a problem. But you have to make it up so you come out of this. What I mean by that, I'll come to it when I talk about some other things in mind. The Ibadah is not only the obligatory worships. It's not only the five-time prayers. What about the night prayers? Be honest. And I doubt it. Do Muslims here pray night prayers? Maybe on this Tuesday. We don't see the effect of it. You don't see the effect. So you need to start now praying optional prayers. Salatul Duha. Those who come to Fajr prayer, I say those who come because they are the best of the community, and majority do not come. And even those who come, they pray Fajr and leave. Don't they know that the Prophet ﷺ said, if you pray الفجر لجماعة and you stay in the place where you pray الفجر in until the sun rises and then you pray two rak'ah. This will equal a reward of Umrah. Sorry, a reward of Hajj and Umrah. A reward of Hajj and Umrah. Now, imagine now every day you are earning a reward of Hajj and Umrah. How much Iman is going to be in your heart? This reward means increasing in Iman. Increasing in Iman. And wallahi, once you just you do this constantly, you will find yourself looking for doing the prayers, optional fasting, you want to give sadaqah, you want to do a lot of dhikr, you want to forgive anybody who yani. But why we don't see all this? Yesterday a chairman was reminding the brothers and sisters after Jum'ah that the donations for the last 5 weeks to the masjid went less. Even doesn't reach the needs of the masjid payment and the rental. Why? Because there is no reminder from the inside. You need a reminder from outside. There was no reminder from inside. Look to, for example, the example of Abu Bakr Siddiq. Abu Bakr Siddiq used to give yani, charity every time. He had a cousin who was poor and he gives him every month payment. Abu Bakr wasn't a rich man, but he made sure that this payment go. Even if I don't eat, this will go. It's a charity. This increases my Iman. There was an old woman in Medina who had nobody to take care of. Abu Bakr Siddiq used to wake up early before Fajr. Of course he wake up very early to pray night prayers, but he doesn't go back to sleep. And before he goes to the masjid to pray Fajr with the Prophet, he goes to the house of this old woman, clean the house, milk the goats, cook the food for her, and then go to the masjid. Is that all? No. When Rasulullah ﷺ, when he called the Sahaba to give sadaqah, Abu Bakr Siddiq came with something, and he brought it to the front side of the the Prophet ﷺ asked him, what did you leave for your family? He said, I left Allah and His Messenger. Meaning nothing. He brought everything that he owns. And this wasn't for Rasulullah because Rasulullah is in need for money and he loved Rasulullah. No, no. It was for the poor people. And when one day after Fajr Rasulullah sallam asked the Sahaba, who of you is fasting today? Abu Bakr said, I ask. Rasulullah sallam asked, who of you visited a sick person today? Abu Bakr said, I ask. Who of you prayed the janazah and followed it until it is buried? Abu Bakr said, I ask. Who of you give sadaqah today? Abu Bakr said, I ask. The Prophet sallam said, never these four things be found with anybody except that Allah Ta'ala will let them enter the Jannah from any gate. Look at that. Are we doing that? Why Abu Bakr Siddiq did that? It's because he feels that he's in need for more Iman. More Iman means more Iman. Now, do we need more Iman? Akhi, you are at the middle of the the fire that burns iman. If I can just give you an example of it. You are at the middle of the fire where the iman is burnt. You are at the middle of the fitna. Just by you walking in the street, believe me, lots of iman will be burnt. Lots of iman. Because of what you see, what you hear. And be serious, don't tell me that, oh no, my iman increases in the streets here in London. I myself never found it increasing. What about you living here? So, at least I don't say that immediately now everybody in the UK has to leave. It's not possible. It is not possible. And to be honest with you, it is not wanted, because today we want Islam to spread. But those who want to represent Islam here in the UK need to be qualified for that duty. Qualification comes from the thing that I said, you have to learn the Aqeedah, you have to increase your Iman, you have to increase your Iman. If you don't increase your Iman, you are poor of Iman, you are not a good representative, you are not a representative at all. So the Ibadah, you have many different ways of it. Look, for example, reciting the Quran. How many of you now recite Quran well? Even the Arabs who are living here, they don't recite Quran well. Why is this? It is because they don't come to the class. They don't come to the circle. Oh, but I'm busy. Well, tell me, how many hours are you busy? How long are you busy? Oh, I work from morning until evening. Okay, what about after evening? Oh, after evening I have to go home. No, no, who said you have to go home? You have to come to the masjid. The Quran is not the last priority of yours. لا أخي, you have to give the Quran its right. You have to come and learn the Quran, how to recite the Quran. You have to come and learn how to pray, how to fast, how to whatsoever worship. You have to come and learn the Aqeedah. You have to come. This masjid must go like a nest of bees. And dealing. Now we come to the very, very dangerous and serious part of it. Dealing and treatments. You are living here, you have to deal with everybody. You can't choose, you can't say just I deal with Muslims. No, you can't. Or I only deal with men. You can't. You can't. You will have to deal with non-Muslims. You will have to deal with women. You will have to. This is the nature of life here. This is the nature of life here. Akhi, have you ever dealt with women here? You can't say no. You can't say no, otherwise you're lying. Otherwise you're lying. Because women here work for everywhere. So you will have to. Now, do you know how to deal? I will just take an excuse for you and say, no, you don't. Otherwise, I say, no, you don't want to do what is taught to you. Because you see, and some of us say, but we give dawah. How do you give dawah? He comes to a woman, cashier woman, in the supermarket. She is a woman, Kabir or Muslim woman, but let's say Kabir now. She is uncovered, she is. And he said, yeah. And now some dialogue come and, SubhanAllah. Who said that this is the law?
Who says that, mashallah, that you are so pious that you don't, you know, get the fitna? Who said that? So how to deal? You need to know how to deal. You get it on two buses. And in the bus, not like in Saudi, back side for women and front side for men. Now, you sit here, opposite to you, there is a woman wearing church cap. What are you going to do? And be honest. Do you do what's supposed to be done? Allah knows best, but take it from me. From my experience, most of the Muslims do not. One of the Salaf, one of the scholars of the past and practices, was approached by a woman who was very pretty, and she had a challenge with her friend that if she can do some trial fitna to Arabia, this one of the Salaf. But this man is a very, very pious man. Who always fast, always, you know, recite Quran, always the remembrance, always, you know, he feels Allah a lot. This woman came to him as if she wants to ask a fatwa. And she was very pretty. She came covering. When she started to ask him, she uncovered. And it was a piece of moon. As it is described, a real piece of moon. Immediately this man, Rabi, pulls down and says, Astaghfirullah. And then instead of giving him the fatwa, he gave her a maw'idah. Reminded her of the fire. He didn't listen from him, nothing. He just kept yani giving her strike. Until that woman decided to be boxer. So instead of she influenced him, he influenced her. What protected that man from this? It's his iman. That he worked hard to build it. Iman doesn't talk to you like this. Iman increases and decreases. So you increase it by doing the righteous deeds. But how often you do these righteous deeds? Let me just ask you, brothers, here in this hall, in this Muslim hall, how many of you visited the graveyards in the last month? We are on the 24th of December. In this December, how many of you? None. Last November, you did one. October, none. Last January, from last January until now, other than this one, 2, 3. Okay, in Morocco, but I mean, since you came here. Now, from January, we are ending the year, 6 days only to close this year. We have 3. Visited the graves. These three, although they visited the grave, but they visited it once. Tell me, when you visited the graves, did you feel that your iman increased? You did. What about you? Huh? Did? What about you? That's why you visit the grave. You visit the grave to remember death. At that moment, did you feel that your iman increased? No. At that moment, did you feel that you feel Allah more?
Yeah.
That's the increase of iman, when you feel that I'm scared that I'm going to be here. So, and that's why Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, visit the graves. The graves remind you the akhirah. Graves remind you the akhirah. So, why don't we visit the graves? If Rasulullah in Medina, Rasulullah used to visit the graves. And he didn't used to teach the Sahaba al-Quran. So don't take it. And he used, and Aisha reported that he visited the graves at night when everybody went to sleep. So if Rasulullah goes and visits the graves in Medina, who are you compared to Rasulullah? What language compared to Medina in terms of iman? As I told you, here the burner of iman, there the factory of iman. But yani, people there still go to the graveyard every time. Here, where you need, you don't go. What does it cost you? Nothing. Only little convenience that you pay. You still don't want to pay this little convenience. You don't want to make any sacrifice for raising your iman. So how come you be yani, a good Muslim? How come you be a good Muslim? Again, back to dealing and treatment, dealing with others. As I said, you're going to deal with the social departments, municipality department, police, and this and that. How many times you make lie to these departments? Be honest. Don't tell me, don't convince me that you are all, mashallah, all the time telling the truth. I don't believe it, unfortunately. Because I keep hearing a lot of stories. As I told you, just take for example, the welfare issue. Many people, you know that the law here, welfare, is to be paid for those who do not have jobs. Am I right? Once you have a job, they start the welfare. How many people have job under the table? They have a job under the table, but they don't tell them. They continue taking that money. Is this a deception or not? Is this acceptable in Islam? No, it is not acceptable. Now this man is taking haram earning. He is making dua, haram earning prevents the acceptance of dua. So how come the situation change? How come the situation change? If you can't struggle, ya ikhwan, if you think that this welfare make you eat cakes, Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam 3 months never had anything cooked in his house. 3 months never had anything cooked in his house. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, in the battle of the trench of Khandaq, he used to put a stone and tie a rope over it to squeeze his stomach, not to feel the hunger. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, one day came out of his house in a time that he never used to come out in it, just because he was very hungry. And he did not take nothing which is not for him. When Rasulullah showed Hassan, his grandson, picked a piece of dates that Rasulullah knew that it is for sadaqah and it is not allowed for the family of Rasulullah, he said to him, "Kikh, kikh, a child with one piece date." He teach him that this is not allowed. You don't take it. Ask yourself how many times you did it with yourself. How many times told yourself, "Kikh, kikh, not for you"? How many times? this type of thing, Ikhwan, we need to understand well. We need to be honest when we deal with anybody and everybody. We need to be honest when we deal with anybody and everybody. And we need to be just when we treat anybody. I don't want to say, look to your treatment with the kuffar and how oppression you make on them. Because many Muslims think whatever oppression is made against the kuffar is a rewardable thing. No, oppression is oppression. Allah Ta'ala said, all my slaves. He did not say all Muslims or all believers. He said all my slaves, all Muslims and non-Muslims. He said, I forbid oppression on myself, and I made it on you all forbidden. So do not forbid one another, Muslim or non-Muslim. How many times you oppress others? Now, how many times you oppress your wife? How many times you, sister, oppress your husband? At least this between husband and wife, I have a lot of stories. Because I keep receiving calls day, every day, not day after day. Every day, I'm receiving calls from the West, from many different countries in the West. Women complaining about their husbands. Husbands complaining about their woman. Oppression, all the time, oppression. Man is oppressing the woman and woman is oppressing the man. Why? Because both of them did not learn, did not increase their iman. They did not learn the rights and obligations, and they did not increase their iman. So there is nothing to control the situation. Neither knowledge nor iman. Nothing. So we have to take care of this. How many times Muslims go for haram things? Mortgage. How many times? They don't care. They don't care. They just go for it. Adhan?
الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر الله أكبر أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله حي على الصلاة حي على الصلاة حي على الفلاح حي على الفلاح الله أكبر الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله
Okay. Oh, it's subject then? Huh? Allah came to me and it came just in time. But we have 15 minutes till the Iqama. So, just finishing. The treatment. We have, and you cannot treat this on Sharia until you learn it. So if you want to run business, you have to study about business in Islam. It's not correct that you go on, and I know a brother who started business here in the UK, and he used to sell some goods that there is original brands and fake brands. And he says that the whole market knows that fake brands, it's a brand, but it's fake, so no problem. Everybody is doing that. Alaykum as-salam. Even the kuffar doing that. I said, okay, now, the owner of the brand, do they allow it? If not, how come they do it? The responsible or related departments in the government, do they allow it? He said, no. I said, how can we do it? Then it is not allowed. It is not allowed. It's haram. Alhamdulillah, this brother immediately stopped. Although it was making him big income, but he decided to stop because it is haram. And I saw this brother, mashallah, wallahi akhwa, his iman is increasing. And he's in contact with me, mashallah. He goes now to Muslim land, it's been a long time, and comes back. He was born here, was raised here. But his life is changing. His life is changing. His way of thinking is changing because the iman is increasing now. The iman is increasing. And when the iman increases, don't ask what it can do. Believe me. One thing it can do, it can provide you knowledge. How? Just even by this. Said in the Quran of Dawood and Sulaiman, father and son, both prophets, in the issue of the killed person, Dawood. The issue of the two partners, the two shivers, the partners. And the case was raised to Dawood. Dawood was not sure of the proper judgment of it. But Allah Ta'ala taught it to Sulaiman, as Allah Ta'ala said to Sulaiman. It doesn't mean that Dawood wasn't, Dawood was prophet. Make me wrong. And it doesn't mean that Sulaiman has more iman than Dawood, but I mean to say that Allah teaches even without you sitting to class, or just Allah Ta'ala made Dawood to know. So and Allah Ta'ala said, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ يَعْلِمُكُمْ اللَّهِ. If you know Allah, Allah will teach you. Allah will teach you. Now if you come to recite the Quran, you will find yourself having understandings, on it. I don't mean now everybody go and catch the Quran. No. You just increase the iman in your heart. By the way, you said, permission. And then this will make you fear Allah. As Allah Ta'ala said, إِنَّمَا يَخْشَى اللَّهَ مِنْ عِبَادِ الْعُلَمَاءِ. And Allah Ta'ala said, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ وَيَعَلِّمُكُمُ اللَّهِ. So, the scholars or the people of knowledge are the most who fear Allah, or the ones who fear Allah the most. And knowledge comes from fearing. If you fear Allah, Allah will teach you. So they are related to each other. So you'll be on that, and inshallah ta'ala you will have the iman which increases, you will have the iman which changes your character, manner, and etiquette, and amount of worship. May Allah Ta'ala make us all from those believers who Allah Ta'ala increase them in iman, in knowledge, and protect them from all what He subhanahu wa ta'ala dislikes. And now I yani, give you the chance to ask, talk, correct whatsoever you want to say. It's yours now until the day comes. And of course the questions are going to be after I say so. The new plan is that after work we're going to have this talk, and after Maghrib there is another lecture with another brother today, Abdul Wahid, tomorrow Abdul Imran, and after Isha I will take the questions inshallah. So these questions are not going to be ignored, we're going to answer them. But now I don't want you to ask me questions in regard to anything, but if you have about what you hear, no problem, we can discuss it. Now okay, now teaching, we have two things to teach about: deen or yani, the school, yani, normal school. And we talk about the deen. Then first of all, the one who is going to teach the child the deen, he needs to prepare himself. He or she needs to go to the masjid and learn, and then teach the child. But if you're talking about yani, this cooling curriculum, if she cannot, then she has to see someone who help her on that. But the alternative is not to send the kid to the school. I mean, if it is not yani, Islamic school, because there in the Kuffar school is going to, yes, he's going to learn something about his dunya, but he's going, as we said, to lose about the akhirah. And as we said, we are here not to build up the dunya. We are here to build up the akhirah. Us and our children. We are only here temporarily. We are there permanently. People in the Jannah permanent, people in the fire permanent. So we have to work for that. Allah. Anything else? Well, as I said, and yesterday I categorized people to four categories. And I said that people who are born here, sorry, people who are rivers, they are from here and they are rivers. They have no anywhere to go to today. Today migration is not that easy. It's not like before, 100 or 200 years ago. You just move to any place and you stay, nobody asks you of nothing. Today it's different. Today you cannot get rid of your passport and you cannot get another passport. Only for some people, not everybody. Now, but people who are rivers and they are from this country or from any other preferred country, they cannot. And it is extremely difficult, and I can't say it is impossible to migrate with the meaning of migration. But the other category, and the other category, is people who were يعني they came to this country from other countries, whether they or their parents came, but they came as kuffar. And he or the, his parents embrace Islam, shall become Muslim. Now this one has the same case of the one who is English or British originally. So he cannot go nowhere unless he goes back. Let's assume now somebody is from, let's say from Bahamas or any Jamaica or something. His parents came here, whether when he was born or before he was born, and then anyway he was raised up here with these two kuffar parents, and now he embraces Islam. How can he migrate? Is it okay to tell him go back to Jamaica? Is Jamaica Muslim land? It is not. So for him to stay here or to go to Jamaica or to go to America, it is the same. It is the same. Now, can he migrate to a Muslim land? Take it from me, he cannot. He cannot. Unless if he goes to work. And I know, I mean, many people there in Jeddah, for example, now some of them for 20 years, some of them for more. For more. 40 years. But they are workers. Their intention is to not to, I mean, go back to the kuffar land. And Allah Ta'ala is making it easy for them. But when you think of it, it's not a proper migration. May Allah Ta'ala give them the reward of migrating, but it is not the problem. And if he loses his job, he's going to come back and live here, which is not from the principles of migration. The third category is somebody who was born of Muslim parents who are from Muslim country, came to work here, parents came to work here, and this child is born here and raised up here, and now he started practicing and he comes to know that I want to migrate. Can he migrate? Yes. He can at least go back to his own country. I'm sure that it is possible. Maybe for one or two, I don't know, everybody knows of himself, but I'm sure that it is possible to go back to your own country. It is difficult. It will be difficult, but not impossible. It is not impossible. Let me tell you a story. One day I was in my masjid and a man, Saudi man, came to me and he asked me, Sheikh, do you speak English? Saudi. I said, yes. Why? He said, I hear that you speak English and you teach in English. I have a problem with my wife. Can you come and my wife is American. So I said, okay, inshallah. His wife said, Mr. American. And I came to know that this man went to America to study when he was like 18 years old. And once he reached America, he just threw the passport, burned it and threw it. And he got another passport and he called himself David and like that, and, you know. And he spent nearly about 30 years in America. He was married to a number of women. One of them was a daughter, the only daughter of one millionaire in America. At the end, he decided to go back. But it was really difficult. How to prove that he's Saudi? He went to the embassy. He said, I'm Saudi, I want to. So I said, okay, prove it. Where's your passport? I have no passport. What do you mean I have no passport? He was telling me that. It cost him half time to return. He contacted his family there in Mecca. His family contacted the government and long, long time, years. At the end, the government agreed that, and they bring him and they gave him a Saudi passport. He came. It was difficult, but it wasn't impossible. It is difficult. يعني you want it easy to come, want it easy to go. This is not the way of life. Life is full of difficulties. Now life is created with difficulties. Now, so this third category can go back, but it is difficult. They have to work hard. They have to work hard. Ikhwan, when we go through the burden of the salaf, we come to know that we are not living. We are not living. We are a dream of someone who's living. He's dreaming of our societies, of our existence. We are not living. Yani Ahmad ibn Hanbal, great imam, he wanted to go to Mecca for Hajj. You know what he did? He has no money. He worked for a caravan as a courier to load and offload their luggage once they, you know, stop, wherever they stop. And in the caravan those days on camels, and it takes maybe a month to reach Mecca. So in this whole month, every night they stop and they offload the luggage. Every morning they move and they upload. Ahmad ibn Hanbal. Is it something easy, Akhwan? Can any one of you do it today? Take it from me, no one will accept to do it. He will delay Hajj until Yawm al-Qiyamah. But Ahmad ibn Hanbal did it. What made Ahmad ibn Hanbal do it? His Iman. His Iman. His high Iman. First of all, you need to build up your Iman. You cannot go to... Well, we'll just inshallah. You cannot go to running race if you never build up your muscles, if you never exercise. If you are loose muscle person like me and you want to go and race people in the field, take it from me, 100 meters and you collapse because the muscle stretch there. This is not the way. You have to build up your Iman first. And you see, wallahi, if you build up your Iman, many ways will be opened. Many, many ways will be opened. Look at those brothers living in the match. For many years, from America, from UK, from... they are still living there. Life there is terrible. By the meaning of... if you never come across the understanding of the word terrible, go there. It is terrible. But their Iman made them to be able to live there. The fourth category, as I said yesterday, is people who come when they are adults. They come to work, they come to the UK for working, for a better opportunity of incomes. They come, and then they either marry from there and bring their families, or marry from here, and both is corruption. Both is corruption for him, for the family, for the society. It's a corruption. So, why is this? Because of the low Iman. Shaitan can easily direct the low Iman person. You go right, you go left, you go right, you go left. You have no control over yourself. You know what I mean? I understand that when I speak sometimes, I just touch the wall and it pains. But I have to do that. I have to do that. I have to be honest with you guys. In order to, inshallah, put the proper remedy to this one. May Allah Ta'ala make us all upon great Iman and increase our Iman and make us from the best of God's best. والله أعلم صلى الله وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه. جزاكم الله خير for your patience. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.